Ho, 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 folks, and welcome back to another episode of Get Wrecked, the only podcast anywhere in the world where two buds take turns recommending and reviewing some of their favorite pop culture hits, hidden gems, and oddities. I am, of course, your host and resident cotton-headed Ninny Muggins Thor, joined today, as always, by my friend and co-host, Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. It's Micah.
That's like the best intro.
Should we just do that forever now?
Like, no music, no song lyrics, just yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Let's get this started. Yeah, fantastic. Thor, we are joined by a good friend of ours. It wouldn't be a Christmas episode without Dan the Man Barton joining us.
Here to promote his new OnlyFans, Dan Barton.
Yep. His new OnlyFans.
Yeah, OnlyDans. Only where Dan's. Him and a bunch of other guys named Dan do manly housework with their shirts off, like in sweaty, you know, chopping wood all sweaty. And
Thor, you got to leave some mystery for the people.
I'm already subscribed.
Well, the pasties you'll be wearing is where the mystery comes in.
Okay. I can.
Because Dan always wears pasties at all times. He has sensitive nippies.
there was a response until there. I got nothing now. Yeah.
Are you going to have like fun little designs and patterns on the pasties? Is that the surprise?
Well, yeah, like different types of tassels. Yeah. And like
sometimes it'll be Vader themed. Mm-hmm, sometimes it'll be, I don't know, Dan to Dan.
Boba Fett. It'll just always be Star
Great
Wars.
Great anime, by the
always
way.
Always Star Wars nipple covering.
Only Star Wars, yeah. We've heard Dan to Dan is a good one. Is a good one. It has been recommended. It may show up in the near future.
Yeah.
We can talk about that one later.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not here to talk about Dan's behemoth hulkingness of a man body. We're here to talk about
Bruce Willis's manly body.
Yeah, I prefer the bear aesthetic, I think.
Okay.
The bear necessities, as it were.
Yeah, the bear necessities. Yeah, we're gonna talk about some Die Hard today, getting into the Christmas spirit because it is the Christmas episode. Is this coming out before or after?
This is coming out on Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Well, I hope all of you are nestled up next to the radio, 1955 family style, with your hot cocoa and your Ovaltine.
Oh, man. Yeah, let's put in a... Do you guys want to do an ad partway through this show for, like, Red Ryder... Like, Red Ryder BB guns or some kind of, like... We'll come up with, like, a 1950s ad.
Yeah.
Okay.
100%. Our dog agrees. Yeah, so we're going to get into, in my opinion, one of the best Christmas movies of all time.
In fact, we are, as we said last week, we are going to make a definitive decision, more so I am, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Yeah. Dan, have you seen this prior to this this episode?
Many times.
Many times. Okay. All right. So Thor is, in fact, the last person on Earth who has seen Die Hard. The last one.
I was super happy to do the refresher.
Oh man,
it's such a good movie.
I was too. I'm so ready to talk Die Hard, and I'm really curious on Thor's thoughts. So let's jump in. Let's dive in. Let's dive into that elevator
Come
shaft
to the
of
coast,
a movie.
Record a podcast.
It'll be a good time.
Hey folks, make sure to stay up to date on all the latest episodes by following us at Get Wrecked Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Or if you have any recommendations you'd like to hear us review on the show, you can contact us directly via email. Or, I don't know, maybe you just want to send us some feet pics. You creep, I don't know what you're into. I don't care. We'll review those too. What do you think of that, huh? In any case, all your requests, feedback, and general criticism of the straight white patriarchy can be sent to getwreckedpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, crew. So today we are going to be talking about Die Hard, the 1988 American action film directed by John McTiernan. Evidently, this was written, or this was based off of a novel in 1979. The book was called Nothing Lasts Forever. It was written by a guy named Roderick Thorpe. that's all I'm going to talk about the book. I have no interest in the book. I am only here for Die Hard. But I just thought that that was a fun fact. So, yeah, this movie was like the epitome of action movies in my youth. I freaking loved this. I have a very distinct memory of having the VHS of this, holding it up and asking my dad if I could watch this while they were away. I was probably like 10 or 12. I asked my mother, and she said yes. And I thought that was kind of strange for my mom, because she was usually the strict parent as far as, you know, making sure I wasn't seeing things that I wasn't supposed to see. She turned out to be saying yes only because she thought it was True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh.
Which is not a bad movie, but also not Die Hard.
And also not particularly like a family-friendly movie, as I recall. Right?
No, but it was PG-13, okay. where this is very not.
No, they dropped so many. I was not prepared for all the F-bombs.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to jump in right away with my first thing that it just kind of took me by surprise is like, mm-hmm. I liked the way the dialogue was kind of, it was not standard movie dialogue. It was almost the way real people talk. Sure. Where they were like, shut the fuck up, you fucking asshole. And I'm like, what? That's like, it was aggressive, but it also struck me because it was not written the way movie dialogue is typically written.
Sure. And this is in 1988, too. So this is like 2 years before the first Batman movie, just to like put some timing on it.
So to your point, yeah, this is definitely not like a kid-friendly movie, I would think, where a mom would be like, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead and watch that one.
Die Hard. Yeah. So this follows the character John McClane, of course, played by Bruce Willis, who is a New York City cop coming to Los Angeles to visit his kind of estranged wife for their Christmas party. He's spending it with the family, meeting in, and of course, like a whole bunch of German terrorists just show up and decide they want to like rob the place, but they want to be real elaborate about it. And so everybody else has seen Die Hard. I don't know why I'm telling you guys the story about Die Hard. You all know about the story of Die Hard. Anyway, Thor, what are your thoughts on this? This is the first time watching. I got to know your initial impressions.
I'm shocked, first off, that you've never seen this movie.
Dan, my voice went up a decibel. Like when he told me he hadn't seen it. Yeah, and an octave.
He was like, what?
Oh, no. Yeah, I can hear the exact one that came from memory.
He clutched his pearls. He did a backflip and then pulled his underwear over his own head.
Yeah, Thor had the audacity to ask me what we should be doing for the Christmas episode. And we're talking and Thor just casually is like, I haven't seen Die Hard.
What? That's the one right there. Yeah.
I said, that's what we're doing. That's the answer. This isn't a conversation. So anyway, Thor.
Yeah. So this is just one of those where like, I was aware of the general concept of it. And I probably have seen it at some point as a kid, or at least I've seen clips. I've certainly seen scenes of it and stuff, but yeah, actually watching it through, I was like, yeah, I definitely had no memory of this. So I truly don't know if I've ever seen it or not, but essentially I haven't. It's probably the greatest action movie ever made after watching it. Like, I mean, just saying, yeah. Like it is a, I don't know for sure, but my assumption is that basically every action movie after this was took a lot from this. It kind of feels like the quintessentially perfect action movie.
I would agree.
That's really my take on it. Bruce Willis is obviously like incredible in this. Alan Rickman has a like kind of like this German weirdo terrorist guy was very fun. The movie overall, not only does it have great action scenes, it's also incredibly funny. Like there's so much like just humor in it innately. Carl Winslow, I don't know the actor's name.
He plays
Sal.
Uh-huh.
Great. Fucking Argyle. Awesome.
Argyle is great.
Genuinely, there's not a performance in here where I'm like, oh, I'm not sure about that. I feel like, aside from the douchey guy, it felt a little bit like cheesy, like, there were like comically
there were,
cheesy.
Here's the there thing, were two though. Douchey guys.
The one who ends up getting, the one who's trying to bang his wife.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
So that was a little bit over the top, but I was like, it is the 80s too. You know what I mean? It's just.
Sure.
It was definitely, whereas the rest of the people kind of felt, I don't know. I don't even necessarily know grounded in reality is true. You know, cause it's like, it's all a little bit over the top. But that's the fun of it. So that was really the only person who kind of just bugged me. But I think the character was meant to bug you. So it was effective.
I think that character was fun in the sense that, like, I really miss movies like this where it's almost like, it's not like super campy, but like there,
it's riding a line though.
It's riding a line,
which is perfect. That's what I'm saying. It's like perfect.
Like, and like you were saying, like with the humor and everything like that, like, cause this guy, I just had to laugh at. Cause like just the biggest douche that you can imagine.
Yeah,
he's from that time period.
Giga,
it's like
Chad, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unashamedly. So
yeah.
He's like Hans. Booby.
Baby.
Baby.
What are we doing here? Like, so stupid, it's funny. And then he gets shot and you're like, yes!
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's the idiot that... I love that scene, too, because he's like, look, John, they're going to kill me. Big wink to Hans. Like,
just the most oblivious guy of all time.
Yeah. What'd you think of the other douchey guy, the news reporter?
What else is... He's from, like, one of the X-Men, right? X-Men movies or something.
He is.
I like that guy. Like, just as an actor, I don't even know his name, but I like that guy.
Are we talking about the guy on the desk or the guy that went to the house?
The guy that went to the house. Yeah. So the actor's name is William Atherton. He played Thornburg, was the character name. He is known for
or a Spider-Man. I think he was in one of the Spider-Man movies, maybe.
He was in Ghostbusters
or the Hulk or one of the earlier Marvel
one of like
movies.
The early Marvel movies. I will look. You guys discuss. I thought he was perfect scum.
That's actually one of the things I wrote down, dude, as something to talk about.
Yeah, dude. And I love at the end of the movie, his wife just punches him in the face and literally. Everybody laughs, which I thought was like such a, it's like this really small thing, but I love she punches him in the face and then the crowd kind of laughs that he got punched in the face. Like everybody kind of knows this dude is a douche, which realistically, like, it doesn't even make sense. Like if a news reporter came up and was trying to talk to somebody and somebody just punched him in the face, be like, whoa, what the fuck, lady? Yeah. Not even right. But I love that everybody is just like, yeah.
Well, the whole thing, so like my fiance, she was in news.
Yeah.
And so I kind of know how some of these things work. The fact that they basically like shoved their way into that house, also put the kids on that, like basically national news, and like essentially coached them like to say something was wild to me. Like from start to finish, basically like trying to shove the door down, threatening to try and get a lady deported.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then putting children on the national news without their parents' consent. I was just like, top to bottom, like, this guy is like.
Well, and this is very, like, very 80s in the way they approach, like, kind of. I'm not a police officer. I've never been in law enforcement, but the way the police officers like talk and act, I'm like, this, I know this is not even close to. Whereas, like, I feel like a lot of times in modern filmmaking, they'll hire a consultant to be like, is this right? Did we get it right? They did not do that in the 80s. It was just somebody being like,
well, look at the FBI. Like, was it Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson? They're like, we estimate about casualty.
No relation.
Yeah, no relation. Such like, a great. Clearly, yeah. And they're, so
it's like 25% casualty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works for me.
I'm fine with that. I can live with that. Like, what? 25% casualty rate? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. There were instances where they clearly were parodies of the sources that they were supposed to be representing. But I do think that there weirdly was a big sense of, I don't know, maybe authenticity is the word that I'm looking for when it came to Bruce Willis playing John McClane.
Yeah.
When it came to the whole group of terrorists led by Hans Gruber, also known as the Great Alan Rickman. You know, I thought that the relationship with all of them and the dynamic with all of them, it felt that weirdly kind of felt grounded.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to like contextualize earlier, where it's like it's tough to say that anything in this, like, it all is a little bit over the top. Mm-hmm. But like Hans Gruber, John McClane, his wife, it, like, none of that felt, even Argyle, like, all of that, none of it felt like those characters, like, they're just portrayed so well that it's like you don't even have that moment of like, I don't believe this.
Sure.
They're actually, like, I think really well fleshed out characters for such a short, you know, it's always, that's something that's tough to do, I think, in any film, especially an action movie where, well, you're not doing a character piece where you have, you know, 10 minute fucking monologue scenes. You know what I mean? You're kind of telling, you're introducing these characters through, you know, through the storytelling. I mean, I think this is a really great instance of telling you everything you need to know about characters without having them go on a 5 minute monologue of who they are and why they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I know what you're kind of talking about. Like, the characters really felt alive without being over the top for the most part. Obviously, there were some...
They're un-over-the-top characters in over-the-top circumstances.
Yes. And I think... And I was thinking about this while I was watching the movie, because, like, it's something that we kind of lack nowadays, because, like, everything has to be so grounded in reality.
Hanging
and,
like, off a ledge, trying not to die?
Yeah.
Because that was a big plot device in this film, like, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, that's fair. But I'm more talking about, like, nowadays, like you were saying earlier, like, they're consulting people and being like, okay, like, is this actually how the police would act in this?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Like, no, fuck it. We ball. Like, yeah, let's go.
We're creating an entertaining action movie.
This, yeah, like, we don't have to worry about, like, what the logistics of them getting 2 helicopters in, like, flying low to the ground through the city. Like, they're like, well, like, how would this make sense? No, it just makes sense because it's fucking cool. So
that's hysterical. Like, okay.
And that's what I miss about, like, these types of movies, because, like, you don't get that anymore.
No, no. I mean, modern filmmaking is very... that it is a lot more... I think kind of classic, like, slapstick comedy is kind of gone the way of the past, as well as, like, a old school fun action movie like this. Not to say they don't make them still, because I think they still try, but it's like the late 80s and 90s were like... I mean, I think it's just the cream of the crop of fucking of comedy and action movies.
All right, so I've got some information. I know that I said I wasn't going to say anything more about the book because I didn't care about the book. But this is somewhat relating to the book. All right, so Die Hard was based off of this novel. And this is from Wikipedia. Take it for what it's worth. We have quoted Wikipedia in the past, and it's been wildly inaccurate. And also, they're trying to get your money right now, so who knows?
But we'll never stop using it.
Oh, we'll never stop using it. No, I'll just complain about it. So, according to this, as Die Hard was based on the novel sequel to the film adaptation of The Detective, the studio was contractually obligated to offer Frank Sinatra the role.
Of John McClane?
Yeah.
Wait, okay, so go through all this again. So where did... So, wait,
this
so
feels
where,
like my
where,
cousin's okay. grandma's yeah. nephew.
So your own grandpa. Okay, yeah. Where does this all begin?
Okay, so...
What's the first thing made?
Okay, so there's the novel that Die Hard was based off of. All right, but the Die Hard was based off of the novel sequel. So I guess the novel that Die Hard is based off of is a sequel that was turned into a movie called The Detective. In this movie, the main character was played by Frank Sinatra.
Okay.
Back in the day. So because Die Hard technically was a sequel in the novel form, they yes. needed to offer the role contractually to Frank Sinatra because he played the main character in the previous movie that has no connection to the Die Hard movie, but the book that the movie was based off of is connected to the book that Die Hard was based off of.
Okay. So basically, there's two books written.
Uh-huh.
The first book is made into a film.
Yes.
And then the second one, they take it, make it into a movie. It has nothing to do with any of that, but it is technically from the same source material.
Yeah.
And so Frank Sinatra would have been, what, probably 50 or 60?
70.
Oh, my God.
70 at the time.
That old bitch.
And then it just said... He declined. No
dude,
shit.
Oh my God. Can we imagine an alternate universe where Frank Sinatra is hanging by a fucking machine gun in an elevator shaft?
I'm imagining them trying to pitch this to him.
That old greasy Ginzo fucking.
So it was, the role was then offered to other stars of the time.
Sylvester, the Rat Pack. They're like, Sammy Davis Jr., do you
want... The entire Rat Pack.
Sammy Davis Jr. is Argyle.
Dude.
So, it was offered to Sylvester Stallone, Richard Gere, Clint Eastwood, Harrison Ford, Burt Reynolds, Nick Nolte, Mel Gibson, Don Johnson, Richard Dean Anderson, Paul Newman, James Caan, and Al Pacino, and also Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wow. They all passed on this role.
Yeah. It says the prevailing archetype of the era was a muscle-bound, invincible macho man like Arnold Schwarzenegger. So this movie actually created a different type of action movie. Considered blah, blah, blah.
We went through all those options and still managed to land on the best one.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's why, and I get that because Bruce Willis, like I said, he's kind of like a tight little twink in this movie. You know what I mean? He's not super, he's not in huge shape. He's in good shape, but he's not like a huge muscle bound guy.
Right. He's not Rambo.
And also, I think more importantly,
more importantly than physically,
is he's playing like a very like vulnerable character. Where it's almost like he's not a macho man. He's kind of like, he's kind of been cucked by his wife a little bit, and he's just like sad for her. Like, because a typical action movie is like, oh, I'm gonna fuck all the ladies. You know, here's the hot, here's the hot seductress trying to honeypot him or whatever. You know, that type of shit. And really, like, he gets like at the very beginning of the movie, he gets like a passing glance from one of the stewardesses, kind of like a sexy look, and he just kind of like shrugs it off. And whereas like he's a family man who wants to see his family, and he's trying to save his wife, and he's like very upset about the fact that they're not still together, and he doesn't really know how to like handle that. So it is, especially from coming from prior to this film being made, it's definitely, he's more of a nuanced character than just a big muscle-bound fucking dummy.
For sure. Yeah. And they, I guess the production company or whoever was high up in the producer seat were not super, they didn't think that the movie was going to do well because it had Bruce Willis at the helm of it. Because he was a TV star doing like comedy shows at the time. And so then he got paid $5 million to do this in 1988. Which I guess is one of the highest at the time. So they were like, I don't know how good it's going to be. And then it becomes one of the best action movies of all time.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, I've only seen this once for sure.
Yeah.
And watching this, it's like, it makes sense to me why people love Die Hard. And this is one of those kind of similar to like The Godfather, where I went into it being like, okay, if there's anything I can shit on, I'm going to, but I don't really expect there to be that much.
Yeah.
And I really was like taken by just like, oh, this is just the perfect action movie. This is why people love it. It makes sense because it is, there's literally nothing you could change to make this better. It is a perfect piece of art. Well, I don't know if art is the right word for an action film.
It's a perfect timepiece.
It is
for
the
one.
Perfect representation of what an action film should be. Yeah. This is a popcorn flick, 100%.
Yeah, shooting, you know, probably 150 bullets out of a single magazine on an MP5. Like, rule of cool.
Exactly.
There was definitely some rule of cool in this. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. How does he end up with only two bullets left? Where it's like, where did all the other ones come from?
I like to think that he was picking up the enemy's guns as he was killing them and using them, but I don't ever think that it shows that.
No.
But in my brain, that's kind of what I'm telling myself is happening.
It's a magazine of holding.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Are you guys, do you guys want some fun trivia? So
yes.
I just decided, just while we were sitting here, I'd go to our good friend Thor and Dan, ChatGPT. And okay. I said, hey, ChatGPT, I need some fun facts about the movie Die Hard. So here we go. You ready for this? You guys can tell me to elaborate on any one of these. One, it wasn't originally supposed to be an action movie. Two, Bruce Willis wasn't the first choice. We've already covered that.
What was it supposed to be?
It says Die Hard was based
romantic
on
romantic comedy.
the
Die Hard. Hans Gruber is the third part of that love triangle.
Yeah, it's a love triangle between John and his wife and Hans.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah, so this says that it was. It just kind of talks about the it being based off of the book. Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe. So the book is a sequel to The Detective, which had been adapted in the 1968 movie starring Frank Sinatra due to contractual obligations.
I kind of want to watch that now, too, because I didn't know Frank Sinatra ever did movies.
Oh, yeah. He's been in a couple of them. Yeah. So
you might be disappointed by that.
You
one.
Probably will be.
It'd be fun.
It would be fun to watch. Yeah. Bruce Willis wasn't the first choice. We talked about that. Bruce Willis's salary made headlines. Alan Rickman's first movie role.
Really?
That was his first?
That's what ChatGPT says.
What yep. a way to come in.
He wow. entered the film, or entered his film debut at Die Hard at the age of 41.
That's crazy. And then he never did another movie till he was Snape in Harry Potter. It's wild. Yeah,
basically.
Wait, no, he was in Dogma. I'm sorry, Alan Rickman.
Oh, man,
R.I.P.
What a good role that was. Oh, man. Dogma.
Aren't they re-releasing that?
What, Dogma?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I would be okay with that. Hans Gruber's death scene was a surprise. The Nakatomi Plaza is a real building. Improvised yippee-ki-yay. The script was written on the fly. The broken glass scene had clever tricks. The movie invented the reluctant hero trope.
What clever tricks? What's that mean?
Said to make it appear that McClane was walking barefoot over shattered glass, Bruce Willis wore a specially designed rubber prosthetics on his feet.
That's so really not that special of a trick. It's like a very, like, you know, this makes a lot of sense.
Maybe
let's
it
put
was
some an, shit over your feet.
Maybe it was an 88. Who knows?
Special toe shoes.
These are my feet. Yeah. Yeah, the movie invented the reluctant hero trope. It made Christmas movies cool. That sounds like ChatGPT is editorializing.
Taking
I think.
A little bit.
Is it
yeah.
though? Is it?
The explosions were real. The script flipped a cliche. This one just says "ho ho ho" sweater scene. It was inspired by The Godfather.
Oh, like when the horse. In the horse head, you think?
I would imagine it'd be something like that. The,
dude, what an awesome scene, though.
Or when...
I loved that.
Yeah, or when they send...
I have a machine gun now, ho, ho, ho. And they're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, such a brilliant, like, brilliant scene of him just fucking with them.
Yeah. Or maybe it was the when Luca Brasi was killed, they mailed Luca Brasi's, like, bulletproof vest with a whole bunch of fishes. And so they opened it up, and they're like, what is this? And I said, that's Luca Brasi's vest. It's this sending us a message. He sleeps with the fishes.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that type of thing. The movie sparked a Die Hard in a ... subgenre. So action movies from here, like, were clearly inspired by Die Hard, but they were just like Die Hard in a bus or Die Hard in a train.
Okay, yeah, that actually makes perfect sense. That's why, as I was watching, it's like, oh, this is like the perfect action movie. Because
yeah.
basically after this was made, it's like everybody was like, let's just do that again.
And then this is kind of fun. Alan Rickman modeled Hans Gruber's accent and demeanor after Shakespearean villains. Blending charm with menace.
That's very Alan Rickman.
It is very Alan Rickman. Yeah. So anyway, those are my 16 ChatGPT trivia.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Way to go, ChatGPT.
Right?
We love it.
Coming in clutch. All of it's true, I'm sure.
There was something you said that I had a thought.
The reluctant hero?
No, it was one of those last ones that you said.
it sparked the Die Hard in a dot dot dot, the sweater scene flip.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Die Hard thing. So like I said, it's this similar to The Godfather, or The Usual Suspects when we watch. It's fun to watch something that's so well known and beloved, coming from a place of not really having seen it, only knowing, you know, certain tropes or whatever.
Oh, sure.
But it was funny seeing things that it's like, oh, the reason I've seen this a million times is because it appeared here first. Or probably. Like, sure. The hanging. Like I said, I made a joke about it, but it's like, there's a number of scenes where he's, like, hanging. Yeah. Which is such a, like, just an overused, trope now. Right. Or for many years.
Sure.
Ongoing. Where,
shoulder
like,
strap of a gun, fire hose.
Yeah, fire axe, like all kinds of...
Yeah.
Literally. That and the part where... The very end, where he has the gun strapped to his back.
Oh, sure.
And he knows something that the villains do not know. They think he is unarmed and is about to be killed. And he also... He wants them to believe that. Because he has the gun strapped to his back. And so he starts laughing like an insane laugh and then Hans starts laughing and then the other bad guy starts laughing, which really doesn't even necessarily make sense, but it's just, you know, it's just like, it's a really good scene. And then that's been used so many times since then. And I'm like, oh my God, this is probably like the first time that was used.
Sure. The introduction of it. Yeah. Oh, man, what a fun... I love this movie so much. Dan, you've watched this a ton of times. In this rewatch, was there anything that jumped out to you at all? Or,
So it has been a while since I've seen it, but not, like, too terribly long.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was, one, kind of shocked at the almost lack of product placement in this movie.
Okay, yeah.
Like, there was Coca-Cola, and mm-hmm. then there was Crunch, and that was kind of it.
Sure. There was that one, like, centerfold image of a lady, but
like
that he kept running by.
I feel like in that era of movies, like, movies would just be littered with it.
Sure.
But it just wasn't.
That's how you paid for them.
Exactly. So, I did notice that. Just... Like I said, I was really enjoying how lively everything was. Mm-hmm. And without... I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. Lively without a care.
Okay.
Like, you know, kind of like what we were talking about, like having a story that was told through the story without having to stop for a monologue.
Sure.
Or... anything like that. Like, you just made of it what it was.
Yeah. I think the pacing of this movie is fantastic.
Perfect. And yeah. I was just really enjoying myself. This actually wasn't my first Die Hard movie that I ever watched, though.
What was the first Die Hard movie that you've ever watched?
It was Live Free or Die Hard.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me?
Dude, high five, Dan. We're in the first Die Hard movie was Live Free or Die Hard Club. Fuck you all.
Actually, so I saw that in theaters when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because somebody wanted to go see it. And I was like, yeah, sure, I've heard of Die Hard. I've never seen it.
I'll go see the fourth Die Hard movie.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It made me want to watch the first one.
I guess if there's a silver lining in any of this.
And I still watch that movie when it comes on TV and stuff like that. I do enjoy it.
You guys are driving me insane. That's so wild to me.
I don't understand why, though. Like,
I don't know. One, that movie is, like, at that point in time, Die Hard has progressed into, like, the Fast and the Furious films, right? Like, they started out as racing movies, and then now they're, I don't even know what. They're, like, action movies that where they're trying to take the car to space.
They're, like, heist movies, right? Basically, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's the escalation of just the stakes through all of those movies. So by the time you get to Live Free or Die Hard, it's so much more outlandish than what the first Die Hard is. And in my opinion, the first Die Hard is the best Die Hard. The second one is okay. And then the third one, I think, is better than the second one. And then from there, they don't matter because at past that point,
of course not. Yeah.
All right. Like past
that
point,
it was a huge time jump, right? Where yes, they were like, we're going to reboot the franchise.
Jump.
Yeah.
And they jumped the shark, you know, like past the third one, they jumped the shark. And now just Live Free or Die Hard is so over the top with all this crazy shit. The thing that I love about Die Hard, the first one, is that Bruce Willis is like, John McClane is like, in over his head.
He is
almost
scared the whole film.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that part of it where it's like he is not the action hero who is calm and collected.
Right.
He is scrambling the entire movie. Like, I think one of the greatest scenes is when the guy is shooting up into the air ducts and he like slowly clicks his gun and has it pointed.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this thing of, oh, he's ready. He's going to shoot this guy as soon as he has a chance. And he has a chance, but he doesn't because he's like, I know I will just get fucking killed and shot in the stomach
sure.
if I do it.
By like the other
and
two guys.
And he's just
that are
saved
there.
By a chance. And like the fear you see in his eyes, it is the reluctant hero thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like he is not an action hero. He is a.
He's a competent guy thrown into a position where he could do something.
Yeah, he has to. Yeah, so fucking incredible. Yeah.
I think one of my favorite lines is when he's talking to like the dispatcher lady and she's like, sir, if you have an emergency, call 911.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And she's just like, this is for emergencies only. And he's like, no fucking shit, lady. You think I'm trying to order a pizza?
Yeah, dude, so great. And also, once again, kind of one of those like over-the-top silly things where it's like, not how the police would actually respond in any way. It's like, you have somebody saying, hey, there are terrorists who took over a building. They're like, hey, this isn't for crank calls, buddy.
Yeah.
If you have a problem, call 911.
Yeah. And like the only thing that gets the whole police force there is him throwing a dead body off the building
into a cop car.
Like, it's just insane to me. It's so wild.
Dude, I love Carl Winslow in this. Once again, I don't know the actor's name. Not going to learn it. I'm going to call him Carl Winslow.
And that was the other thing, too. He's like, yeah, I shot a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And he still has a job.
Yeah. Well, and also they're like, I'm a desk jockey because I killed a 13-year-old kid, could never pick up a gun again. It's like, how did you become a sergeant then?
Yeah.
Very silly. But I love their dynamic of, like, they start calling each other partner, and that's like they're in it together. It's such a like they're getting to know each other over the radio.
Yeah.
And just the two of them together, even though they have, if you think about it, their actual on screen time together is like,
it's just the 20 very end
seconds.
Of the movie. Yeah.
20 seconds. But you feel like, you can feel the love that they are like, you can feel their kinship, their bond,
yeah,
their friendship forming, even though these scenes are filmed fully without the other person there.
Yeah.
I mean, for all we know, Carl Winslow and Bruce Willis met each other for a total of one day during the filming of this movie. Who knows?
Also, his name is Reginald Vell Johnson.
It's Carl Winslow.
That's fine. I'm just throwing that out there. But yeah, I get it.
I'm so sorry, Reginald.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, this was one of the first like action movies that stuck into my brain. Hans, I didn't even know Alan Rickman as an actor. I just thought Hans Gruber was such a cool villain.
Yeah.
And I loved how he was threatening, but also like kind of suave in his appearance, and he was very tactical.
Yeah, he's that great archetype of he's got it, he's got a plan, he's cool, calm, collected, shit's going crazy around him, and he's like, it's okay, just stick to the plan, no worries. Like, just a great villain archetype.
Something that jumped out to me watching this that I really hadn't picked up on in my previous, I don't know how many times I've seen this, was that they were just totally setting the roof up to explode so that people would come down on helicopters to make them die so that it would create a diversion so that they could leave.
Yeah, and so that they would think they were dead.
Yeah, and so that the part where he's making demands to the FBI and saying, like, I have brothers in arms in this country and in this country. He's just totally bullshitting all of that.
Yeah, literally, there's one part where it's like they're talking about some Chinese thing, and the guy's like, the fucking Wuhan 7, and he's like, yeah, I read about it in the newspaper. That's just the only Chinese city I could think of off the top of my head.
The Wuhan 7.
They ended up coming back, y'all.
Yeah, you sure it's not the Wuhan 19? I'm just curious.
Oh, that would have been better.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. So that jumped out to me, because this time around, I caught that, and I'm like, oh, that's funny. He's 100% bullshitting. Like, he doesn't have any affiliation with these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At all. Yeah.
Just wants them to run around and waste their own time, essentially.
Yeah, I really appreciated that.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you a story about this movie, watching it.
Oh, okay.
And it's not really related to the movie at all. First, I got to start by telling you a story from yesterday, because I watched this today.
Okay.
So yesterday, I'm off this week, so I'm home with the baby. I'm feeding Dean breakfast. He's in his high chair, and I'm watching, Disney has a new Beatles documentary called Beatles 64. It's fucking great. You should watch it. It's like, it's about the first time the Beatles came to America to be on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Okay.
And they had like a crew following them around recording. There's a bunch of interviews. There's like an interview with, Smokey Robinson and Little Richard. And, it's fucking incredible. It's a great look into like the Beatles and kind of like Beatlemania and the British invasion, and it's really well done. But in any case, they're kind of talking about how like where the Beatles got their inspiration from and the music that they loved, and one of them was Little Richard. And so he's eating, he's not looking at the TV, he is eating his breakfast, and they play a clip of Little Richard doing Tutti Frutti.
Okay.
Tutti Frutti, oh Rudy, woo!
Brave Little Toaster.
And Dean immediately starts dancing when he does it in his high chair.
With that
he's
song.
Dancing. I'm like, dude, I fucking love this kid. He's the best.
Yeah.
This morning, we're watching it. And he didn't watch most of it with me, but like it was just, he had just woke up. He was kind of just sitting next to me. I was like, I'm going to start the movie a while. And John gets in the limo with Argyle, and he's like, play some Christmas music, and he puts on the Run DMC Christmas album.
Yeah.
And there's that great joke where he's like, I said Christmas music. He's like, man, this is Christmas music. But Run DMC is playing, and Dean starts dancing to Run DMC, and I'm like, dude, this kid is gonna be all right.
If nothing else, great music.
If nothing
taste.
Else, yeah. He gets music. He gets it.
Yeah.
So I appreciate this movie for that. If that, nothing else.
That leads me into the question.
Yes.
Is this a Christmas movie?
Yeah, I do think we definitely have to have, is this the portion where we start discussing,
yes,
is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thor, what do you think?
Okay, so I think it 100% makes sense to me that people watch this for Christmas and why people say this is a Christmas movie. I do not think this is a Christmas movie, though.
Oh, yeah?
I do not, no.
Okay. Why?
I think there are certain things that you have to have to be, and this is my personal opinion.
Sure, sure,
but
sure.
As we've said, I'm the final decider, and you got to live with it, folks. So, Die Hard.
Absolutely not.
Not Die Hard. Not a Christmas movie.
Oh, man.
Although, I understand why people would watch it at Christmas and would like to count it among Christmas movies.
Yeah.
I think there are a couple hallmarks that you need for something to be considered a Christmas movie. First of all, the fact that it's Christmas has to be a driving plot of the point.
Okay.
A driving point of the plot.
Okay.
Of which it is.
Take Christmas out of this movie. How much does it really change?
Then why is he there?
He could have just came to surprise his wife. He could have just came. It could have been.
No, because she knew that he was coming. She wanted him to be there.
It could have been Thanksgiving.
The reason that she wanted him to be there is so he could spend time with the kids for Christmas.
There is a good bit of Christmas music. But like I said, I get why it is kind of meant to be a Christmas movie. But I don't feel like you would have to watch this. Like, I could watch this movie in the summer,
mm-hmm.
and I would still get it. I would say I would not feel. You can't watch fucking Jingle All the Way in August. You can't watch Elf in August. It makes no sense. You could watch this at any point in time. The fact that it's Christmas during the movie is in many ways secondary. It is an important part of the plot, but you could change it and nothing else about the movie would really change. He's still a guy who's estranged from his family, wants to see them.
Okay, all right. Is that the crux of
too much foul language? A Christmas movie needs to be fun for the family. Also, and maybe, look, you know me.
Uh-huh.
You know I love tits.
Sure.
I'm on record as saying, I love tits.
Yeah,
you
okay.
can't have tits in
That's
a Christmas
fair.
Movie. You can't have tits in a Christmas movie.
All right.
I feel like, so, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. I do think this is a Christmas movie. That being said, I do think that this very much comes down to a type of question of, like, along the lines of, is a hot dog a sandwich?
No, a hot dog is a taco.
Hot dog's a taco.
Everybody's going to have a different definition.
Cube rule.
There is only, God, do we got to do it?
We got to do the cube rule.
Okay, cube rule.
I know what the cube rule is.
Well, I'm saying then you know that a hot dog's a taco. Why are we discussing it, Dan? Scientifically
because,
proven.
Because, well, we may all be in agreement
mm-hmm.
of that. Not everybody else defines it that way. I do think that this is a Christmas movie.
Some people think the earth is flat. Some people think the earth is flat. So what? What are we doing here?
Well, people are entitled to bad opinions.
Well, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Wrong.
No.
I mean, obviously you have a bad take here and I'm not taking it out on you. So you know what,
it's
Thor?
The cube rule of Christmas movies.
I don't know if I can agree with that.
Christmas movies can't have people saying you're a fucking asshole. Christmas movies can't.
Why not?
Christmas movies can't have tits.
Why not?
And Christmas movies must rely on the fact that Christmas is a central role to the film and the film can't exist without it being Christmas.
I would say it's pretty integral to the plot. But once again,
make it Thanksgiving. It's still the same movie.
Okay. I'll give you that one.
Okay.
I will give you that one. But that being said, I do think that there is almost like a, like there are family Christmas movies, but then just like there's family movies, there's other types of movies. Doesn't make it any less Christmas just because it's not family
oriented. I think it does.
Okay. All right.
For example, Bad Santa. Bad Santa with, what's his name? He fucked Angelina Jolie.
Billy Bob Thornton or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
And
great movie. Very funny. You don't need to watch it at Christmas.
But is it a Christmas movie?
It's a movie about Christmas. I think it was an attempt at being a Christmas movie. I don't think it's a Christmas movie, though.
I've actually never seen that movie.
I think you could watch it during the summer and it's still funny. It's a comedy movie that takes place during Christmas. Just same as this is an action movie that takes place during Christmas.
What about, okay, so my only other question to that is then, like, Home Alone.
Home Alone. Very important that it's Christmas. Because everybody is... The Sticky Bandits?
Mm-hmm.
The only reason they're out robbing houses is because it's Christmas and everybody is away for Christmas.
Okay, hold.
He stops... He has a long conversation with Santa Claus. He hides in a manger scene.
So...
The reason that he's home alone is because it is Christmas and it's so crazy they're going on this Christmas. They can't get flights back because it's Christmas.
And that's why Hans Gruber is there. Everybody's out for Christmas. For Christmas. I can't hit the table to accentuate my point because it messes with the audio, but you know what I mean.
Does he say that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the reason why he chose that time specifically, because the entire building was cleared out except
for
the party.
Christmas party. Okay. All right, that gives me something to chew on.
Oh boy.
I still don't think it changes the film, though, if it's... Oh man, that is a really good point. I had not considered. Did Hans Gruber choose this because it's Christmas?
What other time of the year would the building be that empty?
Oh man.
There was a lot of the building that is still under construction.
Yeah, but everything up to 4:30. Sure. Like, because everything took place on like 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, I think. But, you know, there's 20 some floors below there as well. Like, this was their best shot of getting in, getting what they needed done, and getting out.
So, ChatGPT, I just asked ChatGPT, why did Hans Gruber decide to rob the Nakatomi building at this time? According to ChatGPT, it says Christmas Eve meant that the office was largely empty, except for the employees attending the holiday party on the 30th floor. This reduced the risk of encountering large numbers of people and security personnel. Another reason was that Joseph Takagi, the CEO, was there as well, and they needed Takagi's information. The boss at the beginning that he ends up shooting.
Okay. Hold on. I gotta think now. Well, although it is a main driving point, does the film change if it's not Christmas?
I think that in order for it to be largely the same, you are jumping through more hoops, if anything.
Gosh. You just threw a wrench. I had this argument all planned and ready. You fucking...
No, you actually were your own downfall because you reminded me about the reason why the thieves were rolling through in Home Alone.
Dude, you know what?
Is this...
I hate to admit it.
Oh, no.
I think I was wrong.
Oh, my goodness.
I think this is a Christmas movie.
This is a big day, folks. I was just going to ask if this was a situation where, like, a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square.
I think that is the case, yeah. Where this is a Christmas movie, but a Christmas movie doesn't have to be an action movie. I think it's reverse of what you were thinking.
Okay. But... Oh, man. Because the things that were leading me, that lead me to say that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and you can think what you want. I won't shame you, even if I disagree. Is if Home Alone is a Christmas movie, I feel like that puts pressure on saying that Die Hard is because Home Alone happens at Christmas time, but the crux of the story is more about the thieves, the bandits coming in.
That is true. You could make Home Alone not a Christmas movie.
So like, is Home Alone a Christmas... Maybe the question is there a distinction between a Christmas movie and a Christmas-themed movie?
Yeah, okay.
Because I would be happy with that little Venn diagram.
You know, and I will say, I think Home Alone is also one of those movies that you don't have to watch at Christmas. I think it holds up at any point of the year.
Sure.
But yet, you would still categorize it as a Christmas movie. So, you know what? I've come around. Yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Hot dog!
God damn it! I didn't. You know,
it's a Christmas miracle. You heard it here first.
I had my mindset that it is not a Christmas movie. But it is a Christmas movie.
All right, ending that conversation. Let's move on to ratings.
What are you talking about? Why are we 10 out of 10? It's the best action movie ever made.
Yes. Oh man. Yeah. 10 out of 10.
Wait. I assumed we weren't rating it. Oh. I assumed the rating was deciding if it's a Christmas movie.
Oh sure. Okay. Yep. Is it a Christmas movie? Yep. It sure is. That's our rating.
Is it the perfect action film? Yes.
Yeah. 100%. It's so good. I'm so happy, Thor. I'm so happy. Well, with that being said, it's Christmas Eve, folks. If you're listening to this on Christmas Eve. And you probably are, because you listen to our episodes as soon as they come out. So tomorrow, get some eggnog, open your Christmas gifts, sit around the fire, put on a nice Christmas movie like Die Hard.
Yeah. Watch A Christmas Story, and like, you'll shoot your eye out, and then watch Die Hard where he's actually shooting people's eyes out.
Yep. It's the great, I don't know, it's our Christmas tradition here in this house.
Yeah.
Yep. No one watches Die Hard or A Christmas Story in this house except for me.
Oh my God. I cannot. That's the only. There are like two Christmas traditions I have.
Mm-hmm.
One is watching Elf on Christmas Eve. Sure. Because I always work Christmas Eve.
Okay.
I enjoy it. I like it. And then I come home. Kendra and I watch.
Watch Elf.
Watch Elf. That's our Christmas Eve movie. I will not watch it before.
Yeah.
And then Christmas Day, I got to watch a little bit of Christmas. Even if I don't watch it all, I'm going to watch Christmas Story.
Some of it.
For a period of time.
Yeah.
Because that's the greatest Christmas movie ever made.
It's a really good one. Yeah, it's, I think it might be.
That's much the as quintessential.
Like, yeah, much as like Die Hard is the perfect action film, Christmas Story, the perfect Christmas movie.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Dude, can I tell you, I had a Santa experience, much like the Santa in that movie,
who
kicks him down, kicks him down the goddamn slide.
When Santa says, "You'll shoot your eye out, kid." Ho, ho, ho. Kicks him.
So we went to where we live. There is a Bass Pro Shop close to us.
Okay.
And if
Not
you,
the Bass
and,
Pro
and,
Shop.
And Bass Pro Shop is like, it's the, such a
the
weird.
Fisher Santa?
Yeah. Well, no. But like Bass Pro Shop is like
they kick you into the aquarium with all the other fish.
Do they have like a tackle box?
Yeah, it's unlike any other store, unless you've been to like a Cabela's or something like that. And I don't even know if this is just like a Northeastern type of thing, but like it's this huge fucking like department store basically with nothing but outdoorsy shit. And I've never been there before. But every year they have like they put up these huge displays. They have a Santa. It's cool. And it was very fun because it actually felt I feel like we don't have experiences where it really feels like Christmas as much anymore since all shopping has gone to online for the most part.
Sure.
But you go in there and Christmas music is playing. There's all these huge Christmas displays. People are having a good time. It felt very Christmassy. I was incredibly impressed by how Christmassy it felt.
Okay.
For at least for like nostalgia's sake of like what Christmas felt like when I was a kid. So fun. And we're like, okay, we're going to do a picture with Santa with the baby. So we do it. I walk up to the Santa and dude looks great. He perfect Santa, not a fake beard, like legitimately a dude. This guy was not a professional Santa. I'm pretty sure he was fucking like Bob who works the fucking shipping department or something.
Yeah, overnight soccer because, Bob.
Yeah, dude. And they were just like, "Oh, you're old and fat and have a long beard. You're gonna be Santa.
You're gonna be Santa." Yeah.
They did not hire a professional Santa because I walk up with the baby. My son is a year and 5 months old.
Yeah.
I walk up to him, and I'm like, "Hey, Santa," and I just get a, "Oh, good evening." And I'm like, "Dude, that's not how Santas are supposed to talk."
Not at all.
And like, and I'm at my heart, I'm a kid. You know what I mean? When I meet somebody being Santa, I'm going to interact with you like you were actually Santa.
Especially with your kid around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, thanks, Santa. And dude, he could not have been more like, I don't give a fuck. Like, he wasn't mean or rude, but he was just like, look at the camera. And, like, he was not, he didn't give us a fucking ho, ho, ho.
What a bitch.
They had like
a little wicker basket
with candy canes. And he was like, "Do you guys want a candy cane?" As we were leaving, I'm like, "Santa, I could not have been more disappointed with that Santa."
Yeah.
It's like, dude, if you are going to be a Santa,
there's something really offensive about not playing the part, I think.
You got to play the part. You got to fucking lean in, right?
Now, I guess my only question here is around what time of day did you guys go?
7 o'clock on
lunchtime
a Thursday.
Lunchtime Santas
so like,
are bullshit Santas.
7 o'clock in the evening?
Yeah. Six, 6:30.
Okay.
It was prime time.
That's prime Santa time.
Yeah. And no, I 100% agree with you, and I agree with all your points.
Yeah.
And the only thing, other thing I'm looking for is like, how long has he been in that chair?
Oh, sure.
With that, like, being that character. Does it excuse it?
Yeah,
no.
I don't give a fuck.
No, it does not excuse
you
it.
You say ho, 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 dude. You say ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree, but I also sympathize because I don't know how many kids have pooped in his lap that day or...
Yeah.
Like...
I do not. I don't care. You know what is also funny?
What they should have done is had somebody that can, like, shifts or something.
Tag, like I said, not a professional Santa, just a dude who works there who looks like Santa.
I wonder how much a professional Santa gets paid.
Probably not enough.
Probably not enough.
Yeah.
Unless there's a Santa union, like, in Jingle All the Way.
Fucking bring. Yeah. Dude, goddamn it. Oh, man, what a funny movie.
Card-carrying member of the Santa Union.
Can I tell you the saddest thing, though?
About this Bass Pro Shop.
Well, like,
Pro Shop Santa?
There was a couple that went before us.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the exact same age as Kendra and myself, mid-30s.
Yeah.
And they were going to Santa to take pictures with their two dogs.
Love it. Love it.
And I was like, this is a sad experience for you. this is a sad moment for you.
People really love their fur babies.
They really do.
They do.
Well, I think on that note, we're at the point where we cut this episode.
Yeah, let's get off here. Let's drink some eggnog, open some presents.
Yep. We've got all of that planned. Yeah, thank you for listening on this very special Die Hard Christmas episode. Dan, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
We
it's
love having
a blast.
You on here. Yeah, we love having you on
here. And that's
the
second time you said that today.
Probably third or fourth, actually.
Bare aesthetic, folks.
He took a blue chew this morning, and he just... Doesn't matter what he does, it won't go down.
So,
you know, Christmas chat.
Yeah. even though it's been decisively that Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie, yes.
We'd love to get your thoughts on how right we are. And even if you don't like or celebrate Christmas, I would still like to hear from you. You know, is there a special Hanukkah film that is an action movie also the same way that there's a Die Hard Christmas?
The Hebrew Hammer.
Is that an actual movie?
It's a comedy action movie, yeah.
Well.
It is a bad Comedy Central comedy action movie from like the early 2000s.
Oh boy. So maybe that. Or is there like an action Kwanzaa film or an action...
I think that's called Shaft.
Action. I don't know, Winter Solstice film, Festivus film. If there's an action movie...
I would love
movie,
to see a Festivus film.
Oh my gosh, I would love it, yeah. Yeah, I want to hear it so that we can watch it. Maybe we'll even watch it next season. Who knows? Yeah, find us on a multitude of outlets. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Threads. You can find us on Facebook. We'll probably be on Twitter/formerly known as Twitter X now. I think if you're going to rebrand something, but everybody is still using the previous name, maybe just don't rebrand it. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. Anyway, or you can send us an email with a recommendation. We'd also appreciate that. You can email us at getrecpod@gmail.com. Throw, how do we spell that?
GitRecpod@gmail.com.
All right. What are we getting into next?
Well,
what are we getting into next?
It is your recommendation.
It's my recommendation.
Yeah, because this was technically our Christmas episode, not anybody's recommendation.
You're right. Okay, so in that case, we're going to keep the Christmas spirit alive, and we are going to watch the second Tim Burton Batman film, Batman Returns,
which also I have never seen.
Which is also wild to me. It's absolutely amazing.
It's another, and same with the original Batman. Just both those movies are like...
I can't believe it.
Not... They're ones... Like, I have flashes in my brain. I probably saw them when I was like a kid.
Sure.
But if I'm being honest, if I watch a movie 6 months ago,
mm-hmm.
I could not tell you most of the things about it.
That's
so
going to make
like,
me recommending things to you very easy from now on, Thor. We'll just watch the same things every year. Just going to recommend the same movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I do not remember Batman Returns.
Dan, have you seen Batman?
I don't know if I've ever
Returns?
Seen it.
It's been a very long... I actually had to look up which one that was.
I can't... It's so weird to me that people just don't have that committed to memory. I'm a strange person, though, I think.
Well, you are a Batman guy.
Yeah, I guess.
Let's be clear here.
Yeah.
Because like I had to be like, is this the one with Mr. Freeze?
Oh.
You have a hard on for Batman. You have a hard on for movies.
Uh-huh.
But this is Penguin.
Yes, Penguin and Catwoman.
So yep. Literally the table is 6 inches off the ground right now talking about Batman yeah. Returns.
It's a heavy oak table.
It's hovering. It's like, you know those...
Once again, Christmas chat.
Yeah. Well, you know those little like weighted plastic birds that you would put the beak on your finger?
Okay, yes. Yeah.
That's that the table.
Go
that's
on.
That's
the yeah. table. Right?
This table's about to become a fidget spinner.
Ho, ho, ho.
With that thought in mind.
Yeah. We're done. This episode's over. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Festivus. Happy Kwanzaa. Whatever you celebrate or don't celebrate. I hope that you have a good time tomorrow or the days that come. I can't stop, evidently. So with that being said, Dan, thanks again.
Thank you.
Until next time, folks.
As always.
You get wrecked out there.
And stay wrecked. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes. It's all a good night.
You know, I really don't like the culture zeitgeist using the word come so just frequently and, I don't know, in such a diverse setting.
Just come out and say it.
Oh, come all ye faithful on my face and back now.
Good night, everybody.